This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
Welcome, everyone, to Friday Training here live at SoFi Stadium, the greatest stadium ever built. And we've been doing this for over 24 years. So I started when Lacey Book was born, and Sean and I became friends 24 years ago, doing these trainings every single week. To help build a community of people that want to help each other and know people that can help each other. I am blessed to be with Dr. Lacey Book and Dr. Sean Dill, two of my favorite friends, favorite business partners, associates, and they are definitely leaders in this neighborhood, this community. Thank you guys for joining me on Friday Training.
Fun to be here.
Heck yeah, I'm super excited.
Well, I'm really excited because we get to do so much together, personally, professionally. There's so much coming up. You guys have a huge event in July. We're doing Michael Chandler's fight together. Yes. We're going to be in New York on Monday together in Atlanta. Well, not Atlanta. We're going to be in Miami as well. But for me, my mission to empower people to be happy, and it's to empower others, to empower others. So I think that's where we first became really close, is I saw both of you as people that were going to change the world and make my job easy, as Sadhguru told me. I was going to help him make his job easy because he wants to empower the whole world to be happy. But it doesn't happen without community. Mm. And I think so many people see, as our brands are growing and the amount of content and amount of events in person, on the phone, email, social media, all you see is Dr. Lacey Book and Dr. Sean Dill. Our primary interest is community. Mm-hmm. So I want to start off with, how can we help people build their community? It doesn't have to be as big as or as small as, but just build a community, a social silo per se, that can help empower people.
For me, you know, it's interesting. I see a lot of, there's a lot of this online, a lot of help groups to build communities. Mm-hmm. And I've been noticing lately, one of the things I think one of the groups I might be involved in, maybe they did a challenge or something to help people to build communities. And on the other side of that, there's a subset of people that are saying, listen, nobody took my offer. I did all the work. I created the community and nobody did the thing. And so I think step number one, when I look at that, I think that the first thing that you have to do if you want to build a community is you have to find the right reasons. That's kind of been even a topic this morning. Being true to yourself and having the right reasons for building the community. A community is not going to be formed if the community only exists to serve you. Exactly. And so the community exists to serve itself. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure out how you can create a vehicle that will serve others. Standing in service to others ultimately will stand in service to you, but you have to first stand in service to others. And I think that's the first thing, is defining what is the big service that you bring to the world. Why would people want to rally around this? And it can be just because spreading happiness, it could be spreading gratitude, it could be cleaning, it could be whatever you want it to be, but that always is the starting point, standing in service to others.
And Lacey, does it have to be standing in service, or could it be a shared concept, idea, or vision that's relative or for the sake of a service?
Yeah, I think it could be a shared concept. What I was thinking when Sean was speaking is, number one, I mean, the thread that binds a community together is vitally important, and that thread is connection. And I think every community needs to be built on connection, and it's usually connection over a common idea, a common resonance, a common energy, a common goal. So many people try to build community around their self, that they're the commonality. And I think that that's where communities fall apart, instead of having it threaded through the community itself. So you need to decide, what are these people looking for? What do they have all in common? What's the shared vision, the thread that binds them and connects them all together? That's how a community perpetuates and builds itself and becomes super strong, not you delivering that as the leader all the time.
And community to me is people that will help each other and know people to help each other, which is different than a following.
Correct.
Because a following can be for the individual.
Right. Yes.
And I find that in the context of having a community, that patience is the biggest obstacle in building a community, because a community cannot be built, a overnight. Following can be built overnight. I could put up a viral video
TikTok and you could have
and I have
following.
A huge following.
Yeah.
But that's not a community.
Right.
And my mission is to help people understand that communities, and I forget where I read it years ago, that in order to change the world, all it takes is a few thoughtful people in congruence. A few. That's to me three.
Yeah.
Why do you think so many people are enamored with following and aren't patient enough to build community?
Well, I think what Lacey said, connection, right? We live in a world that's very individualized.
Right.
And everybody generally is looking out for themselves. I just want to do the best thing for me. How can I get ahead? I just want to get ahead today. And community requires that I'm looking out for myself and for others, that I also have other people in mind, because I understand that I can get further with others. One of the things that I say all the time, and it, you know, in the vernacular, it does not make grammatical sense, but I always say, eventually the community becomes the community. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is that if you didn't do a Friday training, how many people would still show up? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because they're showing up for you, but they're showing up for themselves and the other people, because they say, listen, if the idea is that we can help each other and we know people who can help us, then we don't necessarily need Dave. We don't necessarily need the platform. Mm-hmm. We could just figure out a way to come together. And at that point, I say at that point, the community has become the community. It's transcended the leader, the team that puts it together. It is now a living organism. It's a community that's going to do what the community does. A following, if you don't show up, then there's no reason for
they'll
people to show up.
If you don't post a video, there'll be nothing to follow.
They'll follow someone else.
And patience, though, too, Lacey. Yeah. It takes time to get there. Right. Like I know, because I've had guests train for me,
right,
you know, and have done that multiple times, or they've created, which is my mission, you know, sub-community. But it takes so much time. And there aren't overnight successes when it comes to community. And, you know, it starts a long time ago. Like I said, for this training, I've been doing it 24 years. And they started sometimes with two people, right, just like the meetups started with one person or two people. How can I empower people, or how would you suggest to empower people to have the patience and also the humility to show up to a community of one or two?
I think that the number one thing that you do need to do is to understand future impact. I think a lot of people can't sit in the energy and need of patience because they don't understand how it will impact people or themselves in the future. There's no clarity, right? It's you
for the sake of what?
For the sake of whatever it is for you and for them, right? I mean, you want to empower people all over the planet to be happy, but you've probably actually thought about what that impact looks like around that impact. So a lot of people don't have patience because they're just chasing the next thing. And when you're chasing the next thing, it's because you don't have clarity on where you're actually trying to go. And you're allowing outside external influences to dictate your route. And then of course you're not going to be patient. So it's always, you have to sit down and ask yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I willing to wait this out? Why am I going to show up every single week for 24 years? It's because you have the clarity around the impact and your future self and the future world.
Which brings up one of the most difficult things about building a community is funding a community. And I had a difficult time reconciling this as I moved to making my primary mission, my content and my community, over sports marketing. Mm-hmm. And understanding what it takes in order to finance a community. And there is a struggle for everyone. I remember sitting down with Ed Milet and Tony Robbins about selling on stage. And I said, I just can't do it. I just can't sell to my community on a stage. I'm here to impact people. If they're buying tickets or not, I can't do it. And Tony said, David, have you ever bought my stuff? And I said, yeah, I have actually still, I think it was 12 cassettes, cassette tapes that I, as a young sales rep, would put into my rent a car and learn how to sell and to be consistent and disciplined. And he said, well, how'd that work out for you? I said, well, I've made millions of dollars. He said, anyone else? I said, yeah, I bought bought everything from Dr. Wayne Dyer. Mm. And we advanced from cassettes to CDs. Yeah. And so and it cost a lot at that time for me to buy everything of his. It was on PBS. So at least, Wayne was a little bit more abundant. And he said, how'd that work out? I said, it changed my life. It probably be result in over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And he said, And if they didn't sell that to you, where would you be? And so if you believe in what you do, now you actually fund or finance your community. How do we balance, though, being able to provide different layers of free, of inexpensive, and even intimate and expensive to finance the community and feel worthy of that? What in your mindset have you guys been able to justify the ability to monetize or finance your community?
For me, obviously, having spent tons of time around you, for me, it's all about reconciling time and proximity. So time and proximity is where that reconciles. So today is a great example of this, that we have a packed agenda.
For you, it's packed. For me, it's a little bit slow.
We're interviewing people.
We're at a different time.
We're doing our work that we have assigned on our calendar. But then we have a moment that we're going to transmit and reach other people. Now we're doing this virtually. Mm-hmm. So that is not the same. And I would venture to say the value is not the same as being in the same room as you. So consuming content is great, but that's not nearly the same value as even spending, say, 10 minutes with you in person. The value of in person. So the time is how we reconcile. So the value is on our reconciliation of time, not anybody who's paying, but then we have the access or the proximity to the source of the information that you're trying to get. So you mentioned, well, I've listened to all of these cassette tapes of Tony Robbins. Well, what was more valuable, the hours that you spent listening to the cassette tapes, or maybe the 10 minutes when you were there in person with him? That then had a greater value. Now, if Tony at the end of that was like, I'm going to tell you one tip, Dave, and that tip is sell from the stage.
Yeah.
And give me $500,000. Well, that $500,000 was very well spent, because that one tip, being in time and proximity to the source, and he gave you that information, brings greater value. Because the cassettes were general. Like today, we can't speak to a very specific, although people will say, wow, that was just for me. Like you were speaking to me. It's not done with intention on our end. We didn't get together and say, let's, speak to Bobby, who's in Chicago, and maybe he has an issue. Let's speak to that. We're speaking our truths, and it might speak to them. But if they were in the room, that's far more valuable. So for me, I think that it goes with time and proximity. And I think for everybody else, when you're setting up your offers, time and proximity is what determines the value to the person in the community.
So well said. Now, Lacey, you and I share an energetic resistance as well. Just scarcity, growing up with nothing. Also worthiness of, wow, like I can charge this or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I know that's part of kind of reconciling financing your community as well.
Yeah. Well, number one, I think we're all big believers in giving away as much as possible for free.
That again, because that's exactly what I believe in.
Yeah, we're all big believers in giving away as much as possible for free, because that's what really impacts people. And what I do believe is that if I pour enough into the world, that the universe will give back to me. And so if I'm giving as much as I can for free, the right people that need me, that need my service, that want to take things to the next level, they'll reach out, they'll ask, and then that's when I can charge, because they're going to need a different level of engagement, proximity, time for me in order to reach that level. And so my biggest thing is always saying, how much can I give and continue to give? And I know that I will be fed with the right individuals, and I'll feel that when those people are sent to me, that I am in the right space to charge, because I have the value that I'll provide. And I think that's the hardest thing, is overcoming that.
Now, I got to get your opinion, because you both are family to me, friends, mentors, co-mentors. And I have come up with a justification to call the bullshit for people that are like, how can you charge for that? Mm. I'll do a VIP dinner, which has a limited amount of space.
Right.
I will bring in speakers that charge upwards of $100,000 to come in. and I provide this value.
And there's food.
And usually really good, expensive food. Yes. But it was hard cost. But I justify everything I charge for by what I call the bullshit then. Mm-hmm. So if someone says I can't afford it, or like I did, I don't sell off stage, or how could you charge me to come to this? Then my thing is, I guarantee everything I do that I charge for.
Yeah.
So if I take $40 from you for any reason at all, you can have it back. If I take $1,000 from you for any reason. Mm-hmm. So now when I say to you, look, I am financing my giving, I'm financing my community with you, but I'm also obligated and responsible for being a profit center.
Right.
So if you don't feel, whatever that means to you, a profit, that I have delivered more value than you have given me, then let me give that back to you.
Well, I mean, that's
how bullshit on my side? Am I lying to myself? Honestly, because that's the way I justify the money.
That's a great, we could probably just sit here and talk about this for hours.
I got an hour. This is good.
That's why people have difficulty charging for things, right? You understand the inherent value that you will provide and the actual benefit that somebody will receive. And so you can make that guarantee. So many people can't raise their fees. They have difficulty charging. They charge way too little because they haven't really landed on the understanding of the inherent value that's in the service that they're giving. And if you can be confident in that, then you can be confident to say, here's why I'm charging, and you can have it back if I'm not the profit center I guarantee to be.
And what if someone, before I get to you, Sean, because I know we could talk all day about it, where I also have difficulty is because I've been in this position, and I think you too have been in this position, probably Sean. What if someone can't afford it? So, you know, I believe you can go find the money if it's really worth it for me. I've had that kid, Tay Sweat, right? He borrowed against his credit card and I guaranteed success, and he had success because he took initiative. But, you know, is there a line where you can say, well, I can discount it for you, or I'll let you come for free, because you don't want to go into debt for that?
Well, let me start with the first one. Yeah. I want to go with, I feel like everybody has an obligation to use your gifts. So if you have a gift, you have an obligation, a moral obligation to use your gifts. And in order to use your gifts, so if you have a gift and you're like, okay, I'm going to use it. Let's say that you're a great healer, but you have this gift and you're in your basement in Orange County, nobody gets healed. So then you have an obligation to share your gifts. Right? So basically, from a business world, you have marketing and sales. Marketing creates awareness. I'm going to share my gift. That's why you do all of your content, to share your gifts with the world. And then you have an obligation to use your gifts, because there's no certainty right now that anybody that's watching is actually going to apply any of the constructs that we talk about. The application comes, again, from time and proximity. Those are your coaching clients, right? Yeah. They're being held accountable through a process that has been monetized, and the monetization actually is what creates some of the accountability. Well, I'm not going to pay Dave and listen to him talk to me and not do anything, because that wouldn't make sense. Even the monetization creates accountability. With regards to what about people that cannot afford it? Listen, I think that we as entrepreneurs need to understand that we are self-employed. We are our own boss, but we should treat our own gifts as a business. I love this idea, and I'd love to hear what you think about this. It's arbitrary, but I think that you should give yourself three, just to use a number, three exceptions per year. So now I can say, you could say to me, Sean, I really want to participate in one of your upcoming masterminds, but I really cannot afford it. I would say to you, Dave, listen, as a rule, I allow myself three exceptions every year. Now, it's only May, and so I've only used one. Would you like for me to use my second exception on you? Now this puts it back into your court. Mm-hmm. I find that oftentimes people will either say one of two things.
No, one, figure it out.
Extreme gratitude. Well, one could be, oh my gosh, you would do that for me? Yeah, I will pay for your dinner so that you could be there, because if you can meet Clinton Sparks, it might change your world, right? Or people say, no, I don't feel good, because you are telling me that they're, I'm taking an opportunity from someone else. There's three opportunities. Would you like for me to use one of my three opportunities on you? If it's genuine, you're going to say yes. You're going to say, that would be amazing. If it's not, if you're pulling my leg, you're not going to feel good about it in your soul, because you know that you're robbing an opportunity from someone that probably deserved it more than you.
I would say one more thing too, because if we all subscribe to the idea that we want to give away as much stuff for free as possible, I know that there's a lot of value in the things that we put out that are free. And I know that if maybe somebody doesn't have money, what they do have is time. And if you are driven enough to want to work with me or do the next thing, now maybe you can't input money, but input your time. And I'm going to tell people, I recommend that you look at these three trainings and start there and really start to build and put as much energy and time and effort as you can into those things, because there's value in my free stuff and it will get you to where you need to be so you can afford it.
Well, that's another big deal. A lot of people give the dumb stuff for free.
Right.
Yeah, don't
so then
that.
There's no value.
Yeah.
In the free stuff.
Yeah. And I think you guys know my paperclip philosophy as well.
Yeah.
And that really has saved me so much, because to get someone to engage, and if you're going to give something, so someone wants my proximity and time, but may or may not be able to afford it. So they'll tell me, you know, can you help me with my business plan? Well, I have a free business plan template, which I do, and happy to send anyone. So just, you know, since we're on a training, david@dmeltzer.com, get the free exercises guides, my template. It's really good, but they'll ask me to help them with it. And so it's amazing, because I just simply say, I'll be happy to help you with the business plan personally if you send me a paperclip. And because we all know that doesn't cost hardly anything.
Right.
And they could easily find one and get a stamp.
Yep.
And it's purposely light, so I know it's only one stamp.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, 99% of the people that are projecting onto me that I don't give my time, I don't give my proximity, I don't care, 99% of them won't even send me a paperclip in exchange for my time and proximity. Why do you think people do that? Meaning that they think they want it so bad, but they're not even willing to send a paperclip.
I think that they want to be given it so bad. I think that, unfortunately, I mean, that's the reality of it. There's a lot of people, like you said, they want to be given all of the tools and not necessarily have to take action on receiving the tools, right? And so I think a lot of people go into it with a mindset of, I just want this given to me. And so then when they are given the opportunity, which is actually the best gift that you can get, when they're given the opportunity, they don't take the action because they wanted it in that moment, right? And personally, I mean, we've all been there too, right? Where you ask for something, you didn't receive it in that moment. And so then you tell yourself a story or you justify why not. And then you don't take advantage of the opportunity that was inherently built in there, right? And so that's just my interpretation of it, because what you are asking them to do is so simple. And, you know, I mean, I think that people are conditioned to not actually believe opportunity.
Yeah. Or be aware of what they're given or feel worthy of what they're given.
They're worthy of what they're given.
One of the strategies I also do to build my community is take something that represents my essence. Mm-hmm. So it could be an overlap agreement, could be my business template, could be my student, the calendar guide, but nothing represents me more than my first book. I think if I was going to say what captures your essence, your frequency the best, it would be the combination of my story with my wife and losing everything, and then the template of, you know, philosophies, principles, and elements of those principles combined. And so I make an investment. I'm one of the few people that I know that literally sends now over 100,000 books out. I pay for the book shipping and sign them. And I know that not everyone reads it. And I'm okay with that.
Yep.
Because I'm confident in one thing. If somebody reads it, I will know whether or not they're in my neighborhood. Mm. Not everyone will like it.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone will be in my neighborhood. But the value of, let's say, 10% of the people of 100,000 books that I spend money on, so 10% of those people are going to be in my neighborhood. That's well worth my investment. For you, I know you share a similar philosophy. What mechanism do you use to capture that type of a neighborhood or a community by either giving or investing in your community that best represents your essence?
You have thoughts?
What best represents our essence?
And what do we use?
we utilize our book, so very similar.
Book as well.
And we actually guide people on where to watch and engage with us because we want them to be infused into the community as quick as possible.
Yeah, you do that better than me, right?
Yeah.
You know which videos. Like, I just have a search engine so that, like, I'm using luck, but you actually will listen to someone and say, oh, you need this.
Because here's what you're trying to solve, right? And so if we understand what you're trying to solve and we have the right message or tool for you, we're going to direct them directly there.
And how do you direct them? Because, I mean, a lot of people out there don't know technology as well. So do you send a link or?
Yeah, we usually send a link. Or if we have like a PDF or a template or something like that, our team will just email them and give it to them for free. We don't even ask you to sign up for our list or anything like that. Because again, we value being able to provide you value for free. And so a lot of people will just email us or message us and say, hey, I'm not sure if, you know, a Book Yourself Solid is for me. This is what I'm struggling with. And I'll say, before you do anything, look at this, read this. And if you like it and it feels good, that means the group and the community is right for you. And so I think that's really important.
And I struggle with this a little bit. And I think even just from, you know, when a lot of our conversations today about being your true authentic self, being real, I, one, love to be my true authentic self. I love to just be in that space. But I had to go on a journey to reconcile what, you know, what you were explaining, that it's not going to be for everyone.
Right.
And then I think one of the reasons why I resonated so well with you early on was this student of the calendar. Like, we just went like, but because for me, when I learned about this, I was like, this is exactly the philosophy that I want to live by. So maybe you would say this has gone too far onto one side, but I've become extremely protective of my time, right? Not so much proximity, because I'm more of an introvert. So people can be in my space and I don't necessarily
we don't even know if he's like
I'm supposed to be buddy?
My best friend.
Doesn't bleed
I'm like
my energy,
are you like, when I walked up today I'm like, dude, are you excited to see me? I'm like, I haven't seen you in like a few weeks.
I know.
I was expecting like a big smile.
We're besties and you don't even give me a smile.
For me it's time. but for me it's time.
A lot
and
of
I
may
say that. So
a lot of filtering.
I think that the mediums, the videos, the guides allow people to be in your essence, without being in your physical proximity.
Right.
I am very protective of my time. Like, and I don't have a giant circle. And oftentimes, like, I hear your travels and the stuff that goes on and for lack of a better word, it's not drama, but you know, just the drama that goes on in relationships. I have very little tolerance for that. Like, I'm like, well, if you would entertain some drama, maybe they would let you be a part of the cool kids club. And immediately I'm like, I just rather eat dinner with Dave by myself than be in a room where I think like, oh, well, now we're all friends, because I think even in that situation, but we're not, like, we're not in a real relationship. I value not only just personally, but also from a business side, I value long-term relationships. And in fact, I will tell people, when people will approach me, I will frequently say in business, I generally don't like to do anything just once. So if you're looking for me to do a one-off thing, like, maybe you could just have this and we'll do a one-off. Maybe you'll come to my event one time. I don't generally like that. I value long-term relationships. And literally that's how we met, right? You spoke at an event of mine and I said, but I value long-term relationships. We have to do more than just you come and speak and then you leave, because that's very superficial. And it is rare to find someone on the other side that truly gets that. Mm-hmm. And then that, whether it's a client or even just in a business relationship or even in a friendship, that's truly what I'm looking for. And that's what I invest and pour into, because I feel like that's my essence. Fewer better people, right? Doing fewer better things with fewer better people. That's a Dave Steck, great friend of ours. It's a quote from him. Doing fewer better things with fewer better people. I live by that.
Yeah, that is true. And it always, I know personalities, because I am a widespread person, but reliant on the fabulous few, I call them. Mm-hmm. And so my wife, for example, takes up most of my time and proximity when it comes to that relationship. Then it's friends like you. And then I use time to engage into bucketed relationships. And I'll tell you, because it's interesting, because I'll go to a VIP dinner, which you guys will show up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And other people are showing up to meet all these other people. And I find it fascinating. At first, I was like, oh, I really need to introduce Sean to this person. And there he is in the corner and just talking to my team and gathering information of the people he knows, a few relationships. But the buckets are this, and this is just my own. It's these people come through hardly ever. These people will come through for me some of the time, and then these people will come through for me most of the time. Nobody comes through all the time.
Right.
I don't come through for them all the time. Right. I don't expect them to come through. My wife doesn't come through for me all the time, and vice versa. So I like these three buckets because it goes within the realm of the feeding and bleeding with how relative are they? How much do they feed and bleed me? And what's the association? And I think in respect to the few, I adhere to that with my time. But I also am very good, I think, and benefit from, hey, I know in this spectrum, this is a person that doesn't come through for me a little of the time, and where I respect, like, it's not worth the drama, right, in that spectrum. Because there is, like, this feeling of the Billionaire's Boys Club or feeling left out or some sort of comparative or things that happen that can really, I think, waste your energy. But it also is helpful to, you know, to have this huge network that I have, but also the reality of this is someone that comes for me some of the time, you know, not, you know, very little of the time, some of the time, or most of the time, and be able to distinguish like that. Quickly. Because I do think there's a benefit to having that ability to say, hey, I know this is someone that doesn't come through very much, but bam, all of a sudden they're there and there's value to that, but it's not right for everyone. Do you have, cause you're kind of in the middle, Sean and I, right? I'm supra, he's minima. You're medium.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I see you doing both. You're not always in the corner.
No.
How do you, or, you know, associate, or is there a matrix of evaluation of proximity and time to that bleeding and feeding?
I feel like I've just always connected with people really well. And I think part of my superpower and my gift is the ability to make people feel comforted in my space almost immediately. And and when Sean says, like, you have to utilize your gifts, I realize that that's one of the gifts that I have. And so personally for me, I protect my energy. He protects his time. I protect my energy. And so I'm very protective of who gets let in very deeply. There's not a lot of people that I do that with, but outside of that very small circle, everybody else is in, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
for me, I'm like, I have this really small circle that I protect my energy around, but outside of that, everybody else, if you want to be around, if you want to connect, if you want to talk, if I need to listen, if I just need to be in your space so that you can feel better, that's what I want to do. And so I get fed by being around people. Right.
Yeah.
And it has been a blessing and a curse, because when you feel like you're fed being around people and have that gift, you also open yourself up to being bled by people too.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn to reconcile that that's what comes with the territory.
But I also think there's a danger in what Sean does. And I've seen this as well, is that when you have the few that we do few and deep with people, inherently they lie.
Yes.
Every human being. So they lie unintentionally.
Yeah.
They lie intentionally with good causes.
Yeah.
Intentionally with bad causes. And they also lie in what I call oblivion, meaning they're unaware. It's just genetic and energetic in the lies. And so they'll cheat, manipulate, oversell, back end sell you. And when you really are deep into this, because your closest relationships are human, and let's just use family, for example.
Yeah.
It really hurts more if you don't have what you and I have.
Right.
This whole exterior community of people that come through some of the time, a little of the time,
right,
or most of the time. But if you're stuck in this view, then you have this employee that you feel like you've done everything for, and then you find out that they're selfish and lying and cheating and stealing from you, or you have a family member, or a parent, that does something really effed up.
The now, deepness of disappointment is different.
Yeah, it's really, and you have no one else. Like, you don't have all this surface bullshit to make you feel good about your relationships. And so I know we have a guest coming on right here. So finish up with this one thing, Sean. So you have this closer knit circle.
Uh-huh.
What does it feel like when one of those people, you know, betray or are human?
You know, it's relative to the buckets.
Yeah.
I think that looking at it from a business perspective, the mantra is always make sales offers proportionate to the amount of trust that you've earned. So the buckets are levels of trust.
Yeah.
So if I don't ever come through for you, I mean, and we see this all the time, right? So like we're living in a period of time. I just shared on social media where if anybody knows that you may have spoken to Michael Chandler one time, now they're calling and saying, can you get me these tickets, which are one, expensive, two, like hard to get.
They can get them. I got four, but they're very expensive.
We're working four.
Me and Sean are going to split the profits. Me and Sean are splitting the profits, and we'll give a little bit to Michael Chandler's kids.
Just a little bit.
We'll give it to Covenant. But that, right, if you've never Covenant, come right. through, then your level of trust that has been built is low, mm-hmm. right? If you sometimes come through, still, it's not enough for us to leverage to try and get you tickets to mm-hmm. the impossible event. If you mostly come through, then yeah, I will do that work. But then here's to your question. Then we're going to experience extreme highs and extreme lows. So if I have the fewer betters with fewer deeper relationships, what I also though get is the highs of being able to do really cool stuff with really cool people mm-hmm. versus doing really cool stuff with people I barely know. Mm-hmm. Right.
Nice.
So like I can go all over the place and, you know, do some cool things, but like it's not the
same. I resonate with that.
Right. Well, that's we have a really cool row of eight people. And in fact, what we ended up doing was taking lesser seats so that we could be in each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And so that for me, that will be an amazing experience. Sure, I could have been closer. Sure, I could have been on the floor, but no, I wanted to be with you and the other people that are joining us because it's fewer better people and fewer deeper relations. So I experience higher highs, but that means that the trade-off is I'm going to experience lower lows because people are going to let you down. And the reconciliation of that is merely the fact that people are people, because sitting next to my wife, she lets me down. As you said, it's not comes through always. So I let her down, and then I think that's the same thing, right?
We know how you let her down.
But the highs are really
she's friends with my wife.
The
and
highs
my
are
wife's
really
done.
Good, though. Okay. When I come through, I come through.
Exactly. So does Sean. That's so good.
Well, we have a guest. How about that? We have a guest.
But by the way, before we come to our shortcomings, no pun intended, with shortcomings,
right.
We have to make sure that my wife, Julie, watches this. Why she should come to the Chandler McGregor fight with us.
It's not about two men in a ring. It's about the relationships that we're enjoying with.
All right. We can bring our guest then now. Venus here. Thank you so much.
Hi.
Lindsay.
Sean.
Very nice to meet you.
Yes.
How are you? Good to see you again.
Great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you here.
So just to lay a little bit of groundwork here, this is our Friday training. And I'm known for bringing guests on for Friday Jams. I'm for over 24 years,
Love
so
that.
Longer than you've been alive. You're Lacey.
It's just a lot of Botox.
Yeah. I got to do something about this face. I wanted to have you on, too, because I'm trying to elevate the women who I follow in that I in my criteria is this someone I want my three daughters to follow? Do I want them to watch Lacey or Vina? And you're one of those people. And I want to put not only financial backing behind, meaning getting you guys hired on more stages and getting and elevating your brands more, because that's our future, but also financing the companies.
Yeah.
And so I have Meltzer Funding now, which specifically funds women and women of color, especially. They get special priority. But why do you think today, where I think people have good intentions, the majority of the people out there want to believe at least what I believe, but there's still such a struggle. I'm looking at Aspire, that both work very close with Dan and Eddie and Andrew, and they have the best intentions.
Yes.
And they have a difficult time not having one woman with all of us, you know, A-Rod and Tim Story.
Yes.
If they put too many too, then they have a drop in sales of tickets.
Yep. It's crazy. It's funny that you say that, because this is a conversation I feel like I have with Dan often. I'm like, Dan, this is amazing, and I support you, and I love you. where are all the women?
Yes.
He's like, you know, I'm trying. And I'm like, I will give you a list of 100 women that deserve to be on this stage that will show up and deliver. But I think it's just a matter of intentionality.
That's intense.
That was big cool. My Greek chorus back there.
Or the planes, but we have great microphones.
I love it. Yeah, but I think it's intentionality that's really important. And I love that you're doing this because this is something that's really a passion project for me too. Even our trust, we don't invest into any companies that don't have diversity at the director level or above.
That's beautiful. And I got to add one thing that's very weird for me is that people show up for free for me.
Yeah.
And so I have a model, and I know for Dan, I've known Dan since 19. I've mentored him and Fenster and all these kids, and they believe the same as me.
Yeah.
But the thing that's most frustrating is because of the lack of supply and demand that I'm faced with a lot of times where the extraordinary women speakers that I know, they're like, Dave, I can't make it because someone's paying me.
Yes.
And then I feel that, and then I try to get other women, and it's like, I get comments like, well, who is she? So now I'm just kind of inviting them and elevating brands that maybe people don't know as much. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Lisa, I'd love to hear your perspective.
Well, but it's really interesting because I think that somebody has to change the way that things are done. Somebody has to be the overcomer, right? Like when you talk to Dan, he's like, well, ticket sales drop when I put
Did a women's event specifically, which I don't think solves the problem.
It doesn't necessarily solve the problem because we still have to be okay with the fact that we're still looking for quality, not just women, right? And I say that with love, but I think it's important because there's a lot of amazing women out there that have perfected their craft and their message, and they're powerful and they empower. But somebody has to be willing to say, I'm changing the tides. I'm okay with putting on a couple of events that may see a drop in ticket sales to showcase these powerhouse individuals and let them share the message that they have in order to change that tide. And we really just need somebody to step out and say, I'm okay with that.
I love that.
Yeah.
And Sean, how do you feel coming from the other side of it? Is, you know, I have people in my circles like Kim Perrell and Cindy Eckert and, you know, the Hello Alice people in the female quotient. But yet I still feel they're not represented correctly. And I have some decision-making. So, and sometimes I have to be honest, sometimes it's just out of convenience that for me, I send out a thing. We're doing a VIP dinner in New York, and I'm hoping that you'll come and see and maybe give me advice, but I'll just blanket out an email saying, hey, who wants to be my special guest in New York, Atlanta, or Miami at Aspire dinner?
Yeah.
And, you know, invariably, these amazing women, just numbers wise, it's out of convenience. I'm like, okay, cool. Kim's coming and Cindy's coming or whatever. But then there's like 100 men.
Yeah,
of course.
Well, feel, and
you put on a lot of events as well.
Yeah. And in our events, it's exactly what Lacey was saying. It's a coupling of that with what it's interesting was we dedicated the first half of the training to this idea, right? It's the value that gets created, and it's, whether fortunate or unfortunate, the reality is that even though we talk about things like diversity and it being inclusionary, that's not the reality that we practice on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to say something like, we look at this, because it's not the norm. It's not like a given. Like, of course you have all of this equality and of course you have diversity. Of course, like, there is no other way to do it. But that's not the reality, which is why we have these mechanisms to vet. The same thing is, listen, the reality is that decisions get made on who can share or should share based off of how many Instagram followers they have, not based off of the quality of the message that they will deliver.
Very true.
And that's an unfortunate reality that we live in. And I agree with Lacey. Somebody just needs to change and say, here's what I want, is I want to deliver life-changing, impactful messaging and have 10 people's lives change versus having 15 people have their ears tickled and feel really good about themselves.
And there is, even at levels of speakers. And in sports, I use this analogy because I was blessed to represent the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, cool.
And so when I went to the Hall of Fame, I thought, wow, they're all Hall of Famers, right? In which they are, by the way. then there's like the, you know, this Hall of Famer, Ray Guy, compared to Joe Montana.
Mm. Right.
right? Compared to this Warren Moon and Troy Aikman and Steve Young. Mm-hmm. And so there's these levels, and the levels that I call it, and I think it's really prevalent today, is there's ticket sellers and impact.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that, you know, you have so much impact from your, you know, business acumen to being able to articulate your business, which is a gift. Yeah. There's a lot of people, not men or women, who engineers mostly too. I'm sitting there going, holy shit. Like, how can I get this guy to tell everyone what he knows?
Right.
Or what he's been through
in a way that they can understand.
Exactly. Yeah. But you're one of those people.
Oh, thank you.
And so do we end up, in articulating that message using social media, like stuff like this, where I can capture you with all these other people and then amplify that so that in a sense, we're building a brand that more people are going to be aware of and be able, like, I got to get that woman. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She needs to talk to my company.
Yeah. I think there's a big knowledge gap from men that run companies and don't see diversity or having women on stage as important, because we also attract a different audience. We attract a new market share that they're not seeing. So yes, ticket sales might drop in the short term, but in the long run, women are controlling more money than ever before in the history of time. Right. And
they're better leaders in companies.
They're better leaders. They're better founders of companies. If we look to Silicon Valley, women do more with less money, not because they want to, but because they don't get funding. Right. And so companies like yours that fund women and women of color specifically are an incredible force. And I was actually just talking about this last night. So my securities attorney is based here in LA too. And so I was on the phone with him. He's like, I just landed in LAX. And he's like, okay, I'm not going to come get you from the airport. And I'm like, I know, because, well, first of all, you'll charge me like $7,000 for this pickup. I'll get a car. But I was talking to him, and I was talking about Serena Williams. And I'm so impressed by her, not because she's the greatest to ever play tennis on the face of the planet, but she's actually a really phenomenal investor. She has 14 unicorns that she invested in early stage. And when you look at why she's had so many winners, it's because she focused on women-owned and people of color that get undervalued and underrepresented. And she put her firepower behind them, and then they just took off. So it's a great case study of what happens when we are intentional. Like, if she hadn't have done that, that might have been hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. We don't know yet because they haven't exited, but those are massive to a portfolio. And so I just think it is foolish to overlook the power of women in these spaces too.
What's interesting that you say too, like undervalue and underestimated. I think that that happens, like you said, on the stages as right? Because we are looking at those vanity metrics and women are quietly doing things in the background, right? And there's powerful women that have great messages and can articulate those messages, but they're doing things quietly in the background. So they may not be as boisterous or out there on social media, garnering all of this following and these metrics, but they're doing just as great work. Mm. And so if we stop looking at potentially, like you said, the ticket sales, the bug lights, and we're looking at actually what's happening and their impact, then we can actually change what's going on with women speaking.
Well, can I go out? You know, in San Francisco, they have the BART train.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's that down there, like there's that one rail. Do not touch this.
The rail.
That rail, right?
Yeah. You're going to go there, aren't you? Good.
I'm going to touch the rail.
All right, touch it. Let's see.
Well, I think that too, part of it is, listen, I feel like females have stronger self-esteem and self-confidence. And the reality is, here's the third rail.
That's not the rail.
I was going to say, it doesn't feel like a rail.
A lot of these stages are pay to play.
Right.
That's true.
So there are a lot of males who are paying money to feed their own ego and lack of self-confidence.
Ooh.
Whereas I think it is far more difficult to find females that you're going to go to and be like, will you, I'll put you on my stage. I think they're like, I don't care.
I get that on my TV show.
Yeah.
Because we have pay to play positions on the show, and I'm forced with the decision of, are you going to turn down this revenue?
Yeah.
Or have an all male audience or all male
panel. And you've been there with me.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I have to make the lost decision. The only times I don't is if I'm not going to break even.
Yeah.
And it's mostly female, be honest, it's mostly female influence that my wife's not going to allow me to do it if I lose money.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So it's still a business. I mean, that's understandable.
But it is true. And I'm looking in on that third rail of that pay to play side that, and I understand why. So think in the positive now. So you're a super successful businesswoman. You're a super successful businesswoman. What can we do? Mm-hmm. What can we create? Because I love creating win-wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
That now, you know, do I do, and it's not all women, but do I have VIP dinners and only invite women special guests? So I'm doing, like with Dane Cook, I mentioned this to him. Dane Cook and I are doing a 4-date collab. Mm-hmm. It's laugh louder, think bigger.
Oh, I like that.
Change your mindset through comedy.
Like that. Yeah.
And we bring out the best of what we do best. But I'm thinking, what if when we do things like this, we ask women to be special guests?
I mean, I'm not mad about that.
No. What if we only had women in it? What if we had or special pricing or free for women to attend to inspire them?
Yeah.
Because maybe they don't want to be, maybe they don't want to be the special guest. They don't want to sit the panel yet.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to go on the stage yet because they're, and listen, I would be, I have trepidation about entering into some of these worlds.
Mm. Yeah.
So I would even think like, because here's the other third rail is, are they just using me? Mm. Am I being invited because I'm a female?
Right.
Is that it? Is that, so once the relationship is established, then people, again, we talked earlier, trust gets built. Now I trust you. So now we have a relationship.
Right.
So now she can know that I am inviting her on her merits. Mm-hmm. Right. And so then I could do it. I don't even know if I'd have to do all female, but I can begin to have more females on the panel or on the as special guests because I've developed the relationship and I understand the merits. And so now the trust exists going two ways. And you have the trust already of your audience. Right. And so now they know that you're not doing it.
Right. And my objective, and I love to be transparent about why it's so important to me. And it was funny because every daughter I had, I started with three daughters, ended up with one little boy who's 14 now. But the first daughter, right, the nurse gave me this advice. She said, baby doll, God's going to give you what you need. And so I had my first, I grew up with all boys and one girl.
Oh,
okay. So then I had my second daughter and I'm thinking, he's giving me what I need. Yeah. Then I had a third daughter.
Like, and okay, I really need daughters.
I need daughters.
Yeah.
And because there's these lessons. And I'm looking and thinking, okay, one, I know my purpose is I want to fund more women.
Yeah.
Because I want to save our country and the world.
Yeah.
And the women entrepreneurs are going to save the country and the world if they're financed correctly. Because they're better at doing it.
Yeah.
But then I look at Serafina,
who's,
you know, an incredible young entrepreneur, student. And I'm thinking, if you weren't here, when I met Serafina, she wanted to film a meetup of mine and said, I'd like to intern for you. And the first thing she said is, I watch Bob Proctor videos every day. And I said to myself, you're hired. And she looked at me like, what? I go, I can't teach you. If you watch Bob Proctor every day, you're prepared. But what I really wanted her to say was, I watch Vina every day. I want Lacey every day or Kim Perrell or Cindy Eckert every day. And we just haven't gotten there yet. And it's going to take that money to get there. And so I want to be very upfront with everyone here. I'm open to your ideas. Right? Email me. I put on so many events with these guys and other people. Let's all make a community effort and say, okay, how are we going to not just do content? That's easy. But let's get them on the stages. Let's get them as hosts on the TV shows. And more importantly, let's fund them with their great businesses to move forward. I'm going to circle back just as an ask. If you guys can make an ask on this topic of what, you know, you would like to see our community do. It's, you know, obviously a big community of how and what we can do for you.
Well, you know, one of the things that I always say, too, is that, I mean, and I would love to hear a little bit from Vina too about, because I live it with Lacey, but about the negative, the downside, right? The hate that comes from people.
Oh yeah.
Because one of the things I say is that
that's universal, brother.
It is, but you have to deal with it, right? And so I say this, you know, support is conditional. And I get a lot of hate from that. I know it's not, what about unconditional love? There's no such thing as unconditional love. The reason why you love that particular child is because that's your child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the condition. Everything is conditioned. And so, I mean, listen, I think that, you know, my ask is very much the same thing is that we began talking about community, and thank you for welcoming us into the community, and thank everybody who's watching for welcoming us into the community. And
I've been looking at the wrong camera, by the way, the whole time. Hey, everyone.
It's this one. Oh, yeah. I got you.
I'm a professional.
But it's fine.
Okay, good.
But I think my ask is an energetic ask, because we talked about the community and support is conditional, and it's energetic support. So it's not something that somebody would do or say. I think it's just welcoming us into the community and sending us that positive vibe. Just like I hope that Lacey and I are sending that energy out to every single one of the people in your community.
I love that.
And because of that, we know that we can count on each other. We moved up a bucket in like, all right, so now you sometimes come through for me, right?
I love that.
I know we're coming up on time, so I want to hear what Vina has to say. So
one quick ask, though.
One quick ask would be to reach
money.
We talked earlier about taking action, right? And when people are given opportunity, so many people don't take action. And so right now, if you are listening to this and you resonate with the message that you would want to see more females who are empowered with a great message be able to deliver a message to you, send an email today. That would be my ask. And give him an idea or a thought or something that you would like to see, because he gave you an opportunity and I hope you take advantage of it.
Awesome.
Love that. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for speaking about this and putting your brand and your vision into reality, because I think it's going to take, I always say this is like the quintessential alpha male when they realize the power of women and support women, because male voices in the space are actually more powerful than women's voices when it comes to this topic. So first of all, thank you. I'm raising two twin 4.5-year-old daughters. So this is very near and dear and important to me. The one thing that I do is I speak on a lot of stages. Last year, I spoke on 110 stages. Every single time I'm on a podcast, a stage, a webinar, it does not matter. I always make an effort to say at least one woman's name. Mm. So whether, you know, you're talking about your New York dinner, I know Jen Gottlieb, who's a good friend of mine, is going to be there. So that is an example of me saying one other woman's name. And it doesn't matter what it's for. It's saying a woman's name in a room full of opportunity. And I'd encourage men to do that too. You've done it many times on this podcast, but I encourage men and women to both say a woman's name when you find yourself in a room of opportunity. The second thing is vote with your dollars. I mean, this is capitalistic at the end of the day. We're talking about ticket sales. I always tell my community, do not buy tickets if there are no women on stage, because we need to send a message that this is not acceptable. As long as we keep buying the thing, they're going to keep thinking it's okay to do that. And so vote with your dollars. Is this going to be too loud for the?
No, we're good.
Are we good?
Love isn't always on time.
It's a dance party now.
It's the music.
It's your theme music.
Everybody knows, like the Academy Awards. Yeah, they're playing me off the stage right now. They're like, shut up, Vina. You've talked way too much.
I love those points.
It's great points. Vote with your dollars. Yeah, vote with your dollars.
And that's why we don't invest in companies. The first question I ask a company before they tell me anything about their idea, because we angel invest too, is I say, show me your C-suite or your director level and above and your advisory board. If it is all white men, I'm immediately a no. I don't care how much money it's going to make me. I don't need more money. I need more change so that when my daughters go out to find their way in the world as adults, they know that they deserve to be at those tables. And I want that for them. And I can't simultaneously invest our dollars in one place and expect change in another place. So vote with your dollars. Care about dollars.
Love it.
You nailed it. Thank you, everyone. As you know, we're on tour. So come catch us in New York, Atlanta, and Miami next week with the biggest names like Vina and Lacey, especially. We are blessed to be here. Email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Remember, most importantly, be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self and do good deeds. We'll see you next week.